After Caroline closed in 1968, freedom of choice in radio seemed to be a thing of the past, never to return to Britain. However, in 1970, another station, Radio North Sea International, sailed to England and dropped anchor at a position close to where the Caroline ship had been stationed a few years before.
This is the happiest place, Radio North Sea, the happiest place.
It was shortly before the general election, and the Labour government was worried. For the first time in British history, the government ordered the intentional jamming of a radio station. The station made a surprising move by, for 2 weeks, campaigning under the name of Radio Caroline International.
The surge of that time and this feeling we feel. 6 minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock, and my goodness me, what a fun day this is going to be from Radio Caroline International.
The day after the general election, the station changed its name back to Radio North Sea. However, there is no doubt that Radio Caroline's broadcast influenced the result of the election. It was the first general election in which 18-year-olds were able to vote, and a substantial number of them used their vote to support freedom of choice.
Sounds fine. It's Caroline.
Meanwhile, the two radio ships lay in harbour in Amsterdam. On the 29th of May, 1972, the two radio ships were put up for auction. Sadly, the MV Caroline was sold for scrap and broken up. The MV Mi Amigo was also sold, but saved from the scrap yard. A Dutch radio enthusiast bought the boat, claiming he was going to turn it into a pirate radio museum.
One of the sort of people to start to play a part at the very beginning, a sort of a Dutch free radio freak, as it were, called Gerard Van Dam. Gerard was an enthusiastic, you know, had been enthusiastic Dutch free radio man over the years in relation to Caroline, and played a big part in that whole saga. I mean, played a part in the, you know, the actual getting young guys who are free radio freaks to help wash the thing out and clean it up and things like that. But the pros who came at that time, in fact, the biggest influence was, in fact, Peter Chicago. Had Peter Chicago not come to Caroline at that time, I'm 100% certain, virtually, that it would not be there today. And another person to play a large part, you know, who would come second to Chicago, in fact, would be Chris Carey. Because in that era, there was nobody around who was willing to plonk money on the table. So those people really were dedicated, you know, to the idea. It wasn't a bunch of businessmen sitting around saying, right, there's the money, do the job. There are people who were really dedicated to really regenerating the energy of Caroline of the 60s in the 70s, which is an exciting idea. I mean, if you know, to do that, to achieve that, is 1,000 times more difficult to get any kind of energy going. You know, when you think of what Caroline was in the 60s, I mean, it was like, you know, it's almost like recreating the Beatles.
At the beginning of September, the Mi Amigo slipped out of Zaandam Harbour at dawn. Later the same day, it dropped anchor in international waters 4 miles from the Dutch seaside resort of Scheveningen. Within a few weeks, test transmissions started under the name of Radio 199.
Test transmission from Radio 199. If you just tuned our way, good evening to you and welcome to this test transmission. Our programs proper start tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock with non-stop music. At 7 o'clock, it's me, Andy Archer, with you till 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, it's Leon Kayser.
But it was nearly 3 months before the ship was refitted and full programs could begin. Crispian St. John remembers.
I remember when the Mi Amigo first went back to sea. It was after heck of a long time lying around the harbour, and it's doing nothing at all but, I suppose, deteriorating. The conditions were pretty rough, to say the least. There's a load of water in the transmitter hold, it was in the cabins, we had no electric power at all, and there was a lot of equipment missing from all sides of the ship. However, it seemed from the moment that the ship got back to sea, work went on to improve everything. You know, that's from the living conditions to the working unit as a broadcast station. And the first broadcast we made from the Mi Amigo, that was the same day, if I remember rightly, as Radio Veronica changed frequency. They went from 192 metres up to 538 metres, and that was in an attempt to improve nighttime reception for them in Holland. And Radio North Sea 2 began its short-lived transmissions on the old frequency of 192 metres there. In fact, half an hour or less after Veronica moved away. It was also BBC Radio 1's birthday. The Mi Amigo transmissions were made on that day consisted of simply non-stop music, and there were no announcements whatsoever. We did slip in one or two records, such as the B-side of Caroline by The Fortunes, which I think gave things away, because we were not allowed on any conditions to mention that we were Radio Caroline at that time. It was going to be a big surprise. However, I think many thousands of people guessed, and we had hundreds of reception reports from over Europe for that one day's broadcasting. Anyway, that was followed by a long silence, which allowed engineers to work on transmitters and studios to get them into proper working order. And the next time went on the air, it was as a new station, Radio 199, which was meant to be a regional radio station aimed at The Hague and the western parts of Holland. And that, of course, was on 199 metres, the original Caroline frequency of the 60s. 199 broadcast a mixture of programming in both Dutch and English. And we had advertising found to us by a local advertising agency who went round selling airtime to local businessmen. And they would say, listen, if you want to hear your commercials on Caroline, tell us what you want to hear. And they would tell us, give us the details. We would phone the office, or the advertising agent would phone the office, and the details could be broadcast. The commercial could be broadcast within literally minutes on the station. That's how fast things worked in those days. I think 199 was most successful in its own way, especially as it pioneered a new kind of format of mixing English and Dutch programming. And that was rather than splitting them up into, say, Dutch during the daytime and English at night, which was the sort of tradition at that time. However, looking back, of course, the aim of the organisation was to bring Radio Caroline back on the air. And because of that, work continued yet again throughout the day and night towards that end.
Just before Christmas, the first official broadcast of Radio Caroline was made.
Serving the European continent from the North Sea, this is the new Radio Caroline.
Central European time is now exactly 10 o'clock. In Great Britain, the time is 9 o'clock. You're listening to Radio Caroline on 199, the sound of the nation.
Here's an all-American big hit.
Radio Caroline!
Ladies and gentlemen, for the next 2 hours...
Unfortunately, the station was only on the air for a few days before it ran into trouble. Andy Archer explains.
One night, Captain Vanderkamp and the crew came out, all the crew that were owed money, and took over the ship. We were pretty helpless, really, because they came on board with revolvers and things. And once they'd got on board, they threw their revolvers and guns into the sea and just carried lumps of iron and pieces of wood. And we just sat there and were towed into the harbour of Amsterdam.
Chris Carey takes up the story.
It was very freaky how we got out. I mean, we were only in the harbour about 3 or 4 days, and we went out really without too many problems. It was against all odds, but we just did all the right things at the right time and pleased enough people at the right time, and suddenly we just sailed out.
The MV Mi Amigo returned to sea on the 2nd of January 1973. And just after 3 p.m, the station was back on the air.
Sound of the Nation, Radio Caroline!
There were now Dutch programs during the day and English shows throughout the night.
Als je nu pas ingeschakeld hebt op Radio Caroline, dan wens ik u allemaal...
Sound of the Nation, Radio Caroline.
This is Caroline on 259, and the Steve England Going Back in Time show, which will be going through until 9 o'clock, and then it's Robin Adcroft.
Sound of the Nation, Radio Caroline.
And that's about it from me for tonight, and I'll see you perhaps back at 6 o'clock. If you'd like to write to the station or to any of the disc jockeys out here or the Caroline Club, it's Radio Caroline, Post Box 2448, The Hague in Holland. That's Radio Caroline, Post Box 2448, The Hague in Holland.
And now for the next 3 hours, the Norman Barrington Smythe programme.
An album station was a reality. I mean, that was something I believed very strongly, that an album station for the 70s was something that would really have tremendous impact, because suddenly you had an era where all of these artists were putting more effort and energy into their albums than they were into the singles. That the whole emphasis was onto albums, and yet there was no station just playing album music.
Music's right here in your ear. It's Bob Noakes, he's very near on Caroline at 259 Radio. That's really fine.
I was given a radio set to mend one day and I tuned it into a station that was playing continuous music. Quite nice. And I heard a voice say, "This is Radio Caroline." I thought, good grief, they went off the air years ago. This must be a joke. So I kept on listening. And somebody said, "Oh, we're looking for a transmitter engineer and a cook, and this is the address." I thought, well, that's fascinating. And then the woman who lived above me gave me a piece of paper with the address and said she'd heard the same thing, and I was an engineer. Why didn't I write to them? So I did, and two or three days later, I was on the ship. I was supposed to go out as a transmitter engineer. In fact, I hadn't worked with transmitters for a long, long time, and I'd never worked with transmitters of that sort of size. So it was a bit of a blag, but Chris asked me to come over, so I flew over, met him, and said, come out and see the ship tomorrow, and there was no question of you going back on land. I went out to the ship, and I was just expected to stay, and I did stay, and didn't do much transmitter engineering for the first few days because we weren't often on the air, but did all kinds of other things as well and got into the swing of it. One night I'd been working very hard and I slept, went to bed I suppose about 9 in the morning and slept till about 6 or something. And when I got up, Andy Archer said to me, "Oh, Bob, you know, surprise for you today." I said, "Oh yes, what's that?" He said, "You're doing a programme tonight." I said, "What? Doing a programme? You know, can't believe it." And they'd been promoting it on the air for about the previous 3 or 4 hours, the Noakes Radio Spectacular comes to the air this morning at 4, and everybody was expecting it to be an incredible laugh because I'd never done a programme before. I never made any. I never intended to go on the air, never wanted to go on the air, and they thought it would just be a big laugh. And I went on and did a programme which, you know, was reasonably successful, and I think Ronan liked it and asked me to do some more. So I did. I found it a bit difficult towards the end because doing the engineering side and doing programmes too regularly can be a bit of a stretch. But it was fun, you know, something I hadn't done before. I enjoyed it.
Transmissions continued, although there were some problems with both the transmitters and the generators. Offices and studios opened in The Hague to handle advertising and programming.
Sound of the Nation, Radio Caroline!
On Monday the 2nd of April, 1973... a hurricane-force storm swept Holland, killing one person and injuring many others. In the North Sea, radio ships took a beating. Radio Caroline was able to outride the storm, but the Radio Veronica ship, the Nordenay, at the peak of the storm, broke its anchor chain and was washed up onto the beach.
Ja, luisteraars, goedenavond. Hier is nogmaals uw technicus, Ruud Doets. Tot onze spijt moeten we onze uitzendingen staken, omdat we te dicht het strand naderen. We gaan zo meteen van boord en nou, alles is hier verder goed. We hopen dat alles goed blijft gaan. We hopen ook dat u weer gauw muziek kunnen verzorgen. En blijft ons steunen. En aan alle vrouwen, sterkte.
Chris Carey takes up the story.
One particular night, I went to bed at about 11 o'clock. I was world shattered. I was woken up the next day at about 8 o'clock by Ronan to say, "Tell me about the ships." And he said, "Well, where's North Sea today?" And I said, they're okay. And how's us? And we were on the air also okay. He said, "Well, what about Veronica?" I said, "Well, I haven't listened to Veronica today, but I guess they're okay as well." He said, "Well, go and look on the beach because that's where they are. Go and do a deal with them quick." So we went around to meet Bill Vervai and Lex Harding and some of the other people there. And Roland also flew over very rapidly because this was a point where we could make a few quid and also show that we weren't just into money, we were into helping people. And we went across and talked to them. We guaranteed that we'd have Veronica coming out on 259 within 3 days. Well, I think it was 2 days. We didn't have really much time. And we were already off the air with all sorts of problems like generators and aerials and weren't working properly. And we had to guarantee that we'd put Veronica programmes out in 2 days. And all the Veronica personnel who had looked at the Caroline said it was absolutely impossible and that no way could Caroline ever do it. And they wouldn't talk to North Sea because they'd fallen out with them. So it was all down to us or nothing. And I went on board with met Chicago and Dick, who also were very sceptical about the chance of it ever coming on. We worked day and night. I had a terrible cold. Chicago wasn't very well. He'd already hurt his hands by taking a heat exchanger out of some contraption in the engine room, and had ripped all his hands in two and was all bandaged up. And with a lot of effort and energy, mainly with Chicago and Dick Palmer, we finally got Veronica to come on the air. And we were supposed to be on, I think, at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we were 1 minute late, and people were pacing up and down in the shipping agent's office on Scheveningen Harbour, and they were all saying, no way will it come on, you're all wasting your time, and it's all a big mock. And at 1 minute past 11 o'clock, on came the Veronica jingles, and Veronica successfully broadcasted from the Caroline ship for about 10 days.
Radio Veronica, een station voor de mensen van morgen.
At this time, Caroline got a new aerial, 186 feet high. Chris Carey continued.
Caroline Aerial was basically built at night, under cover, under the most amazing conditions ever. The biggest thing on Caroline was when the aerial fell down, was to build a new one. And Dick Palmer, who had lots of experience at building aerials, I had no problems in chasing him up there to do all sorts of things that I wouldn't dare do. But he could do things, and he finally gave up almost on the last section and said, this is suicide, I'm not going to go up there, there's nothing holding me up there. And you climb up there, look at the ship down below you, and it looks like a postage stamp. And there's just nothing holding me up there. And Norman and Robin at the time were sort of quite worried about their positions. And I think they were generally interested in Caroline and what it was doing. And they volunteered to put the last two sections up, which everybody else had said was impossible. And they went up there and they did it. And they managed to get all the guy wires on and they fixed it up. And it was 200 feet high. And for a bank teller and an audio engineer, it was quite some going.
It's really freaky because, you see, at the top of the mast, though the ship was pretty still at the bottom, it only probably moved a few inches from side to side because the weather was very good while we were doing the work. But at the top, of course, the wind was quite heavy, and we were moving about probably 4 or 5 feet from side to side. So working up there is far more difficult than working on the deck. And you haven't got very much space to work around in as well. And you've got to use both hands, and, after being up there for a couple of hours, the soles of your feet begin to ache like mad because you've only got a small area to stand on. It's very difficult to describe how freaky it is, especially if you haven't done that kind of work before.
We used to pay £100, which really isn't very much for a person's life, to climb an aerial, to do things that, I mean, most of them, I remember one day, Yarp had finally put the last wire on it, and he came down right down to the bottom, which took in those days something like about 15 minutes to climb that mast, came down it and said, well, fantastic, it all works. And then I openly told him that I knew nothing about aerials at all. It was all a total fantasy, and I'd drawn it out in the Caroline office house and had gone out to the ship and said, here we go. And they were under the impression that I was an aerial designer and had built hundreds of the damn things. And, you know, one or two people, about four people in fact, got £100 for risking their lives. And I went through some terrible moments thinking what I was going to tell these people's families, that if they'd actually fallen off and killed themselves, which was absolutely inevitable if the aerial had collapsed or anything had gone wrong with my theory, that they would have crashed into the sea or into the ship and just killed themselves. Whatever was I going to tell their people that if they'd killed themselves just for a mere £100? I think Robin and Norman, who put the last two pieces on the mast, got £50 each because the money was running a bit low there. And they never even said, don't worry, but they just said, thank you, that's okay, £50's okay, we're down on the ground, it's up, it's finished. Great team spirit.
Radio, Radio Caroline.
On the 13th of May, 1973, test transmissions began on a new wavelength of 389 metres with a power of 10,000 watts.
You're listening to a test transmission from Radio Caroline International in the medium wave on 389 meters, which is 773 kilohertz. Reception reports, please, to Radio Caroline International, Caroline House, The Hague, in Holland.
By the end of the month, Radio Caroline was broadcasting on two different wavelengths simultaneously.
Blood, Sweat and Tears from their Greatest Hits album, and that was a Laura Nyro song called And When I Die. This is Caroline coming to you from the Amsterdam studios, and something that always amazes me, it makes me laugh, although I shouldn't really do it. We've got a very low door here, and when the customers come into the shop, they're always banging their heads on them, which is a... I think we should have a sign up there.
Bij ons in de Caroline Countdown of Sound. Nou, je kan het papiertje zo dadelijk niet vinden waar het allemaal op staat. Ik zal het u straks dan wel weten te vertellen. Ciao Kakker was dat, genoteerd in onze Countdown of Sound. En dat heette Pardon Me, Sound.
At the beginning of June, a new all-day English service of Radio Caroline started on 389 meters.
And this is Paul Alexander. So nice to be here on the first ever regular program from Radio Caroline International in 1970.
Meanwhile, on the other channel, programs were broadcast in Dutch.
Briefing naar Radio Caroline. Caroline House, Den Haag in Nederland.
Ronan said, look, I don't think it's possible to get two stations out of one ship. It's only been done by Radio England. They spent absolutely fortunes doing it and never really got it together. I'll go to £100. If you can't do it for £100, forget about it. So we bought about £60 worth of copper wire, and we bought some few insulators which weren't very suitable. And we almost ended up with a toilet, which was full of porcelain on the back mast to use as an insulator. And finally, we ended up with some German insulators, which were about £3 each, which finally did the job. And for about 5 weeks, generator permitting, we had two stations going out without any interreaction at all.
In July, a new sound was heard on 259 metres.
Radio Atlantis, set them up.
A Belgian businessman, Adrian van Lanschoot, joined Caroline to run a daytime service for Belgium and Holland.
Radio Atlantis, Radio Atlantis, goede radio. Radio Atlantis, Radio Atlantis, Radio Agogo. Radio Atlantis, Radio Atlantis, is er weer en blijft. Radio Atlantis, Radio Atlantis.
Radio Atlantis is nu 6 uur. Wij wensen u een bijzonder goedemorgen en u gaat luisteren naar een uur non-stop muziek met...
In the evenings, another station took to the air, Radio Seagull.
This is Radio Seagull on 259 meters, and at 11 o'clock tonight Mike Hagler comes along, followed at 1 o'clock by Classics with Bob Noakes. And then from 3 to 6, it's Mickey Mercer's music.
Andy Archer explains why the station changed its name to Radio Seagull.
Basically because several listeners had complained that Caroline wasn't really Caroline when it was playing heavy album tracks. So we decided to call it Radio Girolamo, being as Barry Everett and Hugh Nolan were joining us. Then we had a meeting in London and decided that it would probably be more appropriate to call it Radio Seagull, from the book Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Radio Seagull was quite a unique experience, really, because it was doing what Radio Girolamo was doing a few years previously, but doing it for much longer periods, from 9 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock in the morning. And we had quite a good team on board. There was Barry Everett and Hugh Nolan, also Mickey Mercer. And later on, of course, Mike Hagler joined us, and Johnny Jason and Tony Allen. And we had quite a lot of fun on board. I think Radio Seagull was a good station in as much as we were playing not only rock music, but also jazz and classical music as well.
At 1:41 p.m. on October the 1st, the new 186-foot mast collapsed into the sea. Only a 26-foot section remained. A makeshift aerial was erected and the station continued with low power. The crew of the ship and the disc jockeys, working together, managed against all odds to build a new aerial mast almost 200 feet high and have it completed by Christmas. On New Year's Day, the station went back on the air, not as Radio Atlantis, but as
Radio Mi Amigo!
The station, which took its name from the ship, was run by another Belgian businessman.
Mi Amigo Radio! Mi Amigo, here we go! Mi Amigo Radio! Mi Amigo, here we go! Go, go!
This is Iran.
Dit is het geluid van Radio Mi Amigo Internationaal. 259 meter in de Middengolf. Good morning, this is Radio Mi Amigo International, broadcasting on 259 meters in the medium wave band.
Mi Amigo!
A few days after the opening of Radio Mi Amigo, Radio Seagull returned to the air, broadcasting from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. By the beginning of February, the station was on full power of 50,000 watts. Later that month, the station became known as Radio Caroline once again.
Radio Caroline.
Tide waves roll. Radio Caroline at 259, medium wave to blow your mind. Tide waves roll 259 for your soul.
And the Archer, Radio Caroline.
I think that Stonehenge, the Stonehenge Festival, was one of the most important things that Caroline arranged during 1974. And credit really must go to Mike Hagler and Norman Barrington, who originally decided to hold the festival. And then after a lot of discussions for and against the festival, it was decided that it should go on. And I must say I'm very pleased that it did go on, because I think it was quite an event. We met several people down there, such as the Yogi Surya Premananda, who was to become a good friend of Caroline, and also Howard Phillips as well, who came out to the ship on one occasion to sing his songs. I think when we were arriving, we were probably expecting to find 50 or 60,000 people, but we weren't disappointed when we saw that only 3,000 people had turned up, because they were 3,000 genuine people, and we spent 2 or 3 days really living together and having a good time, which was what the festival was all about. And I think a good time was had by everybody.
Music's right here in your ear, and the Archer's very near on Caroline at 259 Radio. That's really fine.
Give us a bang when you're ready.
Most of the signal sources equipment were new, like we had new microphones, new grams. They weren't particularly good ones because we were limited with our money, but we had new ones. The mixer, very well made mixer, but of course very old, looked a bit tatty, but it worked okay. The inputs of those studios were fed down to limiters, universal audio limiters, weren't they?
Still the best you could buy, but unfortunately valves, and they used salt water didn't like them.
Well, they were drenched with salt water. It was amazing they worked. The printed circuits were really badly damaged. Foils lifted off here and there, and bits of bridge wire put in, and the wrong valves, because they were peculiar trios that we couldn't get in Holland, and we had to stick in other ones that would get red hot, but it ran okay. Then there was the transmitters, of course, the 10 kilowatt, which was well, really the mother of all transmitters on that ship, wasn't it, the 10K?
10 kilowatt was a proven transmitter that had worked throughout the USA.
You could do all kinds of things to it. In fact, we did do all kinds of things to it. It just kept on running. We once had it feeding into a sausage, and the sausage came unhooked and fell into the sea, and the transmitter just kept on charging away, broiling all these fishes all around the ship, but, you know, it kept on the air. Then we had the 50K, which was quite a sight to be seen. Had been very badly vandalised, I suppose that's the word, when it was in harbour. Meters and things had been taken out. And difficult things like delay switches had been taken out. Fellows had come along with maybe a hammer and a pair of wire clippers, clipped off 8 or 9 wires, none of which were numbered, all looking the same, ripped the thing out. You can imagine how long it took to put these back in and get them working properly.
Caroline 259, all the time. Your mind, keep in mind, 259, Caroline, music's fine.
Ich bin mein Baby, quite here.
Radio Caroline.
After a really heavy time with the customs people, left everybody really down and sort of disturbed about the whole afternoon because they'd gone through all the luggage, all the tape recorders. They'd made a big fuss about every single tape had to have an initial stamped on it, which was a bit silly considering we were sending out hundreds of tapes a week and every number had to be different and checked at both ends. And after all of this, Chicago climbed off the tender. He was the last one off, looking as glum as ever, with washing in one hand and the radio telephone in the other, making every attempt to sort of walk off looking smart, got onto the gangplank, and the gangplank gradually started rocking and moving, and looks of horror appeared on people's faces. And the whole thing tipped totally upside down, with him still clinging to it. The almighty splash, and Chicago was gone. Lots of heads over the side to see Chicago emerge, absolutely perfect condition, just soaking wet, not a tie out of place. But he had lost the radio telephone, and he was gradually brought ashore by a hook. But it did break the ice, everybody started smiling a little bit, and Chicago took it very well, as we thought he was going to scream and rant and rave and go burlesque and join the Meebo. And he didn't. He just came out of it and saw the funny side of it. Nobody would sit with him in the car. And I think he just sat about for about half an hour, and after a while it just became normal and everything dried on him. We just carried on.
I remember that after we got through all the shock of him falling in, we were worried about him at first. Dick Freak said, "Get a lifebelt, get a lifebelt," and Kate was just standing there laughing her head off, spitting her sides open.
Because it was funny. I mean, it was a shame, because when he had finally immersed out of the ship and the side of the harbour, which was a very dangerous situation, all he came up with all was laughter. Yeah. Gradually, everybody stopped laughing. He was going to lose his temper, and he didn't. And he came up, in fact, laughing in the end.
But you were very worried about the radio telephone, Chris. Well, so remember, you got two boat hooks and tied them together and poked them down into the dock water, covered in mud and stuff. Said, "Oh, I've got it, I've got it." You pulled it up, and out came this filthy old milk crate with weeds and rubbish hanging off it, and said, "Oh, that's not it."
Oh, what was even sillier was the fact that I'd finally given up that it was too deep. Went away, commissioned a diver who said, "I'll go at 8 o'clock. Now, he knew all about that harbour. And at 8 o'clock, it was 4 feet deep, climbed down the stairs, charged me 20 quid and picked it out of the mud.
Love and good music, Radio Caroline.
You just need no more.
On 259.
During the summer, the Dutch government introduced legislation against offshore radio, similar to that which the British government had introduced in 1967. The law came into force on the 1st of September. There were three other radio ships located off the Dutch coastline. Like their English counterparts 7 years before, they all decided to close down on the day before the law came into force.
Radio Atlante.
Radio Veronica.
Fun, love, and Orion, the music machine.
During the afternoon of the 29th of August, the MV Mi Amigo weighed anchor and, assisted by a Dutch tug, set sail for England. She continued to broadcast throughout her journey, but no mention of Caroline's move was made over the airwaves. On the afternoon of August the 30th, 1974, the MV Mi Amigo dropped anchor at a new position, about 18 miles off the Essex coast. The First Lady of Radio had come home. loving awareness is free. Is free. Is free. Is free.
The LA consciousness thing, which, you know, I've spent about 7 years literally getting, you know, working that one out. You know, I've been through everything from Scientology to the Maharishi Yogi. I mean, I've gone into all those different gear, different gig, different sort of head trips, and the LA thing was was something that has to do with transmitting, it has to do with computers, has to do with the whole consciousness of what the brain is, and that it is a creature of habit, basically, and that if you develop any habit, you know, the habit becomes a fact, you know, that at a certain point, it's effort initially. I mean, to be LA is effort, and people say, oh, I couldn't possibly do it, but the moment that the effort, you know, is over, it's like I've just started doing yoga, and, you know, after a while, it becomes easier and easier, you know, because you get into the habit of doing things, exercising things that you couldn't possibly. Once you get into the habit, that becomes a reality. And that's what we find with the LA thing, that once, I mean, I remember the first time I said to the jocks, you know, would you do it? And they said, it's totally unprofessional. I wouldn't mention love on the air. I mean, no way, wouldn't have anything to do with it, right? Now, my influence, my own influence came from Gandhi and Martin Luther King, King got it from Gandhi, you know, the whole idea of loving energy rather than all the hate energy and the uptight and jealousy and, you know, all that energy that exists in man as opposed to the other energy. I mean, both energies are there, only we've tapped and used and played with the defensive one, and we haven't explored in any serious way the loving one. I mean, and people, you know, the defense mechanism in your own brain is people get embarrassed the minute you even talk about it. I mean, if you said to me, what would you like to be happening in 1984? I mean, you know what I mean? In the sense, like, where would you like it to be in 1984? What I would say to that is that if there was the amount of LA happening in 1984 as there is radio happening in 74, I mean, you know, as compared to 64, I would think that would be 1,000 times bigger achievement. I mean, there are other people trying to get an LA kind of in with their kind of LA thing going. I mean, the basic idea is just to get a habit going in your head that becomes a way of life. I mean, you know, you're just on a habitual basis, you are groovier to people. But I mean, it's not the fact that you're groovier to people, it's the fact that you get into a habit and that habit results in you being groovy to people. Because the exciting thing about this LADA thing is that the loving consciousness is without a doubt a habit that is conducive to the individual. I mean, the individual enjoys the habit at a certain point. Initially difficult, very defensive in his own head about it, embarrassed, won't say it. And that's what I got from jocks at the beginning of it. They said, oh, I wouldn't do it because it's unprofessional, it's not radio, it's not this, it's propaganda, it's political, it's the, you know, all kinds of reasons for not actually, you know, exploring it. And at a certain point then, they did, and they got into it. And, you know, they're still, I mean, it's still going on now. There's an exploration going on, which is very exciting.
You're tuned to the voice of peace and good music, coming live from the North Sea all through the night on 259 meters medium wave.
Radio Caroline.
Go, the best damn station in the world.
This is Iraq. This is
Susie Wafels.
Susie Wafels, dit is de beste. Voor jong en oud, van s'morgens tot s'avonds, Susie Wafels op de tafel.
De Susie Wafels, de Susie Wafels.
Good morning, Radio Mi Amigo.
Ja, goedemorgen iedereen. Goedemorgen Albert. Ik moet wel zeggen dat ik over het algemeen nogal zeeziek word. Maar ik moet zeggen dat het me hier top bevalt.
Dit is Radio Miami Go en dit is de Norbert Show.
Miami Go International presents the Norbert Show.
Het is niet normaal.
Joop van Hoof Show, Miami Go.
Ik ben Marleen. Weet u? Toen ik trouwde, was ik de mooiste bruid. En weet u waarom? Ik kocht mijn bruidskleed bij Miss Sheila.
Miss Sheila, Smedestraat 33 te Brugge, Markt 89 Eeklo, Sint-Pietersnieuwstraat 2 te Gent. Miss Sheila, met modellen uit Nederland, Duitsland.
En exclusief Annie Rose, Paris.
Miss Sheila.
Met 118 verschillende vierkleurenstickers.
Joepie!
Zomertijd is Wally's tijd. Tijd voor jeans en jackets.
Wally's jeans en jackets.
Zomertijd is Wally's tijd.
Mi amigo, mi amigo, mi amigo. Radio!
Bij Suzy.
Suzy Wafels.
Deze de beste.
De lekkere suikerwafels. Bedekt met een laagje heerlijke chocolade.
Formidabel zeg. Vier wafels in één doosje.
Elk pakje gratis één vierkleurensticker.
Suzy.
De echte malse suikerwafels met chocolade.
Dat was het precies, die tijd zijn van 12 uur. Dit is Radio Miami Go Internationaal, uitzendend op 259 meter in de Middengolf. En dat komt overeen met een frequentie van 1187 kHz. Geachte luisteraars, binnen enkele minuten zal Stan Haag een korte verklaring afleggen.
Luisteraars, in een tijdsbestek van 1 à 2 minuten wil ik u proberen duidelijk te maken waarom Miami Go doorgaat met uitzenden. Hetgeen ik nu ga zeggen, zeg ik mede namens de directie van Miami Go, de medewerkers aan boord van ons zendschip en mijn collega's discjockeys hier in Spanje, te weten Joop Verhoef, Bert Bennett en Peter van Dam. Ons streven is erop gericht een groot deel van de bevolking verstrooiing te brengen. Ongecompliceerd luisterplezier in een horizontale programmering. Dit nu is een moeilijke zaak, wetende dat de Nederlandse en Belgische wet hiertegen optreedt. Miami Go mag niet in de lucht, maar Miami Go is in de lucht. Ondanks alle tegenwerking willen wij trachten dit zo te houden. U, ontelbaar aantal luisteraars, heeft hier recht op. De consequentie die dit met zich meebrengt, wordt door ons geaccepteerd. Wij voelen ons geen misdadigers. Wij voelen ons geen onderwereldfiguren die verboden dingen doen. Wij houden rekening met u en wij verwachten niet behandeld te worden als mensen met een criminele inslag. Na 1 september, de fatale datum voor Radio Veronica, Radio Noordzee en Atlantis, bent u tot ontdekking gekomen dat er een leegte is ontstaan.
Mi amigo, mi amigo, hey. Mi amigo, music on the way. Mi amigo, mi amigo, hey.
It transformed a basically non-music country, I mean, this is how I feel about it, into a fairly high music country. I mean, it's that big a change.
it provided musical influence on the public and on young musicians who were coming up in the business. It laid a musical culture on them that they hadn't experienced before. You know, the whole Motown soul thing, which we were very into, you know. The beginning, you know, we played all the Motown. We established Motown in the UK. I mean, absolutely, you know. Plus, it gave exposure to an enormous number of groups who would never have had exposure. I mean, it just wasn't physically anywhere to expose them. So, obviously, today there are something like 100 record companies operating in the UK. There were 4 10 years ago. So, you know, that gives you some idea of the impact, you know, of the. I mean, you know, I have no doubt in my mind that had Caroline not existed, had Caroline not done that, then there would not be. I mean, I can positively say there would not be the number of record companies today, and I'm absolutely sure there would not be commercial radio. I mean, no way would commercial radio have happened without Caroline.
First thing it achieved was that it took the BBC by the scruff of the neck and it put it up against the wall and showed them what radio in the mid-1960s was meant to be all about. The net result right now is Radio 1. Our commercial stations around the country are a direct result of what Caroline and the other extra-legal stations achieved.
No, I think they would probably say Radio 1 was influenced by the pirates. I think they would probably agree to that. Grudgingly, they would agree to it. It's so sad about, you know, maybe it's sad about human nature, I suppose, that people, you know, will exploit and rip off and not ever. I mean, it's interesting also that in all that time, no BBC or government or anybody ever even suggested having a dialogue with me or anybody connected with me. In the setting of that whole, I mean, they just came in, took all our disc jockeys, all our ideas, the whole thing, without even so much as a let's have a chat about it, you know, which I think is, you know, does, I don't know, it makes you feel a bit pessimistic about human nature, you know.
I think during the 60s when Caroline was on the air, it broke a lot of artists such as Tom Jones and most of the bands that came after the Beatles and the Stones. And when we came back on the air for the second time in the 70s, it took us a time to get established. But once we did, we then started to make bands and singers become more famous. And a few of the names that spring to mind are Lou Reed, and we played his Walk on the Wild Side quite a lot. Also, I think we broke Focus. And also, of course, Barclay James Harvest.
Good music, Radio Caroline.
The engine room nowadays is completely different to what it was before. You know, in the old days it was messy, there were tools all over the place and all sorts of ridiculous things going on down there. Nowadays, it's immaculate. I've really never seen anything better. It's got all the tools up on the wall, everything's handy, the generators are all polished, they look brand new, some of them are, of course. The floor's beautifully clean. It really is a wonder. I mean, if anyone comes on board, you can immediately say, well, I'll take it out of the engine room, show you that, you know, because it really is something that's come along an awful long way from where it was before. Otherwise, for the cabins, it's mostly up to the people who live in them. And usually round about summertime when we have a lot of nice weather and calm seas, everyone suddenly gets the urge to sort of go down and do something to their cabin, might sort of repaint the walls or something. We've tried to get some new carpet on board to make it more livable in. But the studio hasn't changed all that much, I suppose. It's still got the same sort of equipment in that was in there before, which is very simple equipment, nothing particularly flash, but it works. That's the main thing. It's got a very nice atmosphere, which is difficult to describe unless you're actually there, because it's got the sort of Caroline vibe about it, which I think is, you know, you never find it anywhere else. I haven't anyway. It's very small, but it's had a sort of it's been redecorated, I should say, quite a few times, because we used to have pictures of the royal family up on one side, and in front of us we've got things like car stickers and stickers from Capital Radio or LBC or Radio City, various other stations. And, of course, the studio mostly is filled up with record racks and also racks for DJs, mail and stuff. So there isn't really a lot of room to put anything, because it's quite small, makes it a sort of intimate surroundings, which is, of course, much better for when you get to actually doing a thing in there. It makes it much more sort of homely. You get the sort of closeness of it. All in all, to sort of sum up, I think it's totally changed from 2 years ago. I mean, it's just, it's a real pleasure to be on there, you know. We've got all the comforts of home, really.
The report that had come out, the government report that had come out in 1962, to say there was absolutely no evidence that there was any need for all-day music, you know, station, was just complete and absolute hogwash. The Pilkington thing, that which was basically a government group who absolutely, you know, had no idea at all what, in fact, the people wanted. I mean, they were totally, not 10% wrong, they were 110% wrong. Which, if that is carried across the whole field of government, then things are in pretty bad shape. I mean, in other words, if all the committees that are set up are even half as wrong as that committee was, we're in bad shape. I mean, basically, because of what tends to happen is that they pick these people out of some kind of payoffs for past efforts or whatever. And so you have a whole lot of these kind of, I mean, I don't even know who Pilkington was, the glass man or something. I mean, what he's got to do with radio, I don't know. But, you know, they pick these committees to pay off sort of political debts, as it were, as far as one can gather. And therefore, you know, therefore they're not really the kind of people that should have been on the committee to make the decision, you know, whether or not. And how you make a decision that the thing is not wanted without experimenting would have been very easy to set up even a local area. And say we're going to take East Anglia or something, we're going to set a station up and put in a truck and blast it out around the 10-mile area, sort of a Radio Caroline in East Anglia. And we're going to have an experiment for 1 year. And at the end of the year, we're going to interview everybody in that area and say, would you like, you know, this happening all, you know, would you like this happening on a continuous basis? And, you know, no question, 90% would have, well, 90, 70, 80% would have said yes. And, you know, these are things that have, you know, out of the whole exercise. Anyway, you know, then I suppose that's that one. Caroline Starr, incredible response, and a very big response from the government as well, obviously. And they go, really? You know, because they just said, no, it's not needed. So there was a big response from them. You know, just the usual bureaucracy response to something that's new and healthy, you know? And, you know, they tried all kinds of things to block it. Of course, the Tories weren't as fanatical. But when the Labour people came in, my God, I mean, it was, I mean, one of their biggest, if you think about it, I mean, the only thing I can remember, I mean, a lot of people, one of the biggest things they did between 64 and 70, I mean, if you, the one thing you can remember that was a definite change was they passed a law against us. I mean, that seems to be their big, I mean, the High Offences Act, it was packed house. I mean, it was like a three-line whip, the whole works. I mean, they really were fanatical about, I mean, they even overrode the democratic rights of the Isle of Man. I mean, the House of Keys and the Isle of Man, democratically elected parliament, second oldest parliament in the world, older than the English parliament even, voted to throw the Marine Offences Act out. I mean, they actually voted to throw it out, and they were overridden by an order in council, which, you know, Wilson used the Queen in that situation, the Labour Prime Minister using you know, suddenly wanting to use the royalty idea quickly to, you know, to override the democratic rights of the Isle of Man in order to block Caroline. I mean, quite incredible. I mean, quite incredible sort of paranoia about the idea of people actually having the freedom to express themselves through a non-governmental control situation. There's absolute paranoia, and it seems to happen with socialists, because the whole socialist package only works on the basis that they control what you think, what you eat, what you do, where you work, and everything about it. I mean, and you know, they control education, they control everything about you, because if they once open it up to a free choice thing, they're wiped out. And I do believe that, you know, Caroline had a big influence on the youth of the UK. I mean, I believe it. A lot of other people also believe it. So, you know, I think, you know, it's reasonable to assume we did have an effect. How much of a change, how much influence, et cetera, we never know. There's no way of measuring it exactly. It's what people think and what people have in their heads. But there's no doubt in my mind that the influence was great.
From a point at sea to the circles in your mind, this is the new Radio Caroline.
Once again, Radio Caroline is alone. She is still playing good music and striving for her freedom. But now she has a new consciousness, loving awareness.